Blog Talk Radio.
This is Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salida.
Persons who are sexually
perverse are, by definition, violating the boundaries of others. The psychological process that underlies these two conditions is the psychological and spiritual need for the power over others. Sexual abuse is one expression of this need of power. It may be due to some unresolved emotional or psychological issues that can be caused by any number of factors. The pastor may have an overwhelming need to help others that binds him to his needs to maintain appropriate boundaries. There may be the presence of unresolved psychological issues caused by the trauma of family dysfunction or social interactions that left the pastor with a need to humiliate others as he himself was humiliated. It may be due to low self-esteem leading to a need to feel wanted. But the reasons are particular to the particular person. These issues must not be used as excuses for misconduct. However, recognition of these issues and their effects are the key to the prevention of abuse and the treatment of the abuser. Ethically speaking, any behavior in which a person is used as an object is abusive. In this case, it involves using a person for one's own sexual gratification despite the negative effect it involves in that behavior. The pastor who engages in sexual misconduct with his members is engaging in an activity in which his power as a spiritual leader is misused for reasons that are ultimately harmful to him, his victim, his church, and his family. Now, you guys, I didn't tell you ahead of time. I'm sorry. I didn't get a chance to tell you ahead of time that you can call in at 347-677-1749. 647-677-1749 is the call-in number. To make your comments, or sometimes just listen in. Okay. It says, the entire system of church and family are harmed by his abusive actions. Because the pastor is the primary role, and I love this part, and the point is slammed home. Because the pastor is the primary role model and leader of the congregation, he sets the terms by example for ethical or unethical behavior in the church. His actions will have a profound effect on the spiritual and psychological well-being of his church and community. I'm going to say this again. Because the pastor is the primary role model and leader of the congregation, he sets the terms by example for ethical or unethical behavior in the church. His actions will have a profound effect on the spiritual and psychological well-being of his church and community. Although all instances of the sexual abuse of power is deplorable and damaging, it is especially true when this behavior takes place with underage youth. Therefore, the first condition that I will address is the issue of sexual perversion in the form of sexualization of young people in the church. The first two narratives concern this expression of sexual abuse in the black church. Now, I'm getting ready to read to you a letter from a 40-year-old woman, and she's basically explaining to you what happened to her. It says, this story, it's called Narratives of Sexual Abuse of Children and Youth, Rape of the Youth in the Black Church. This story was told to me by a 40-year-old woman who is the mother of four children. She was a devoted member of her church and was active in the choir and other activities. However, as she became more educated, she was dissatisfied with the power relationship in the church that did not allow her and other women to serve in positions of authority. As I got to know her, she revealed the sexual abuse she had suffered in her family in the church. This is her story. When I was 8, I was subject to sexual abuse by my stepfather. I recently had a flashback in which I remembered hearing my mother tell her husband, my stepfather, not to hurt me as he came into my room to violate me. I dreaded being left alone with him because I knew what would happen. This abuse changed me from a happy-go-lucky child to a moody kid who began to withdraw into a shell. I was only able to be myself when I went to live with my grandmother during the summers. Even then, I was afraid that he was doing the same thing to my younger sisters. I know I sound like Celie from The Color Purple, but the reason why the movie was so loved by so many black women is because it represented much of what we suffered. Finally, I got old enough to protect myself and threatened to kill him if he ever touched me again. When I complained about his behavior to my mother when I was younger, she beat me severely and accused me of being fast and encouraging his actions. I knew that when I got older and stronger, it would be up to me to defend myself from his advances. Even though I was finally able to defend myself, my mother recognized that I was still depressed. Like most black women, she was suspicious of mental health professionals and didn't want her husband to face the legal system. Instead, she took me to receive counseling from the pastor of the church when I turned 12. I had blossomed early, and I had large breasts, which brought me a lot of unwanted sexual attention from males. Unfortunately, this was also true of the pastor. Instead of counseling me, he told me that was his duty to heal me from the rape and sexual abuse. He told me the only way that could happen is if he was able to show me how to do it right. This led to several petting sessions on the couch in his study, which eventually led to sexual intercourse. I still remember feeling disgusted and afraid as he penetrated me in the name of the Lord. I can still see the picture of Jesus looking down on us as he raped me on his couch in his study. Even though I was afraid that my mother would have the same reaction she had when I told on my stepfather, I finally refused to see him anymore and told my mother why. Much to my surprise, my mother supported my decision with a look of sorrow and hurt in her eyes. The man she had looked up to and given her trust turned out to be just as immoral as her husband. She reported his behavior to his church officials, but instead of confronting the pastor, they accused me of lying. Isn't that amazing? When my allegations became known, I was approached by several other young girls who suffered the same mistreatment. To this day, I am filled with anger at the thought that the church, which was supposed to protect me and guide me, turned on me in order to protect their spiritual leader from harm. I wondered how many other girls he had violated over the course of a 30-year ministry. He is now one of the respected senior pastors in the Kansas City area. When I see him, it is all I can do to stop from gaining my revenge. But nobody cares about the troubles of black women. We're supposed to be able to protect ourselves, and when we can't or don't because we don't know better or because of what we've been told, we become the victims. When I needed help, the pastor let me down. When my mother finally sought out help from me, the church let us down. This has had been a profound negative consequences of my life. I began to think that I deserved to be treated like a toilet for black men to piss on. I've been raped 3 times. I contracted several STDs, and sometimes I have to drink before I can feel comfortable doing it. This has left me with a damaged liver and other health problems. I don't have the strength to change my life. I can only hope and pray that my kids won't have the same problems. What a devastating story. She's 40 years old with four kids. She didn't indicate whether or not she was married. But she went to her church to get help. And her church turned around and did the same thing to her that she was trying to escape with her stepfather. Sexual abuse by a church official. The previous story was not only the only time I had heard about the rape and sexual abuse of young girls by their spiritual leaders. While I was teaching at one seminary on the East Coast, I heard more stories about this and other kinds of sexual abuse by black pastors. The seminary held a yearly conference for ministers. Some of the most prominent Baptist pastors in the country would attend in order to gain continuing education and to mentor young seminarians into the ways of the ministry. At such conference, there were several black female seminarians who had received the call to preach and who were attending to serve the church. After lunch, there was a session that was dedicated to speaking about gender relationships in the Baptist congregation. Several of the women knew of many instances of sexual abuse in the church, and so they raised that as a question at the conference. The ensuing discussion revealed how little consciousness these seasoned and experienced ministers had of the destruction role that they and their peers had been playing in their churches. The culminating story brought the house down as one of the more prominent ministers attempted to show how understanding, helpful, and compassionate he had been when dealing with this problem. He told us how one of his deacons had sexually abused one of the adolescent girls in the church. This particular church official had been given the charge of training the young people to serve the communion and welcome visitors to the church on Sunday morning. This prominent minister recounted how he had received a complaint from one of the mothers of an adolescent girl who was a part of the deacon's group. The mother reported that the deacon had attempted to force her child to have sex relations with him. The mother was a single mother who looked for the church to provide a sense of home and safety for her girl, and when her daughter reported this problem to her, she took it to the pastor, like she was supposed to. The minister proudly told us that after he received this complaint, he called the deacon into his office and confronted him with his abusive activities. The deacon confessed to his misconduct and begged the pastor for forgiveness. The pastor related that he then forgave the deacon and told him that he would be suspended for a month while he counseled with the pastor on how to control his sexual behavior. The pastor told us that when the mother realized that this was all that the pastor was going to do to correct the situation, she complained to the pastor and the deacon board, but was rebuffed. Instead of filing charges and in order to spare her daughter from more humiliation and abuse, she and her daughter left the church in disgust. When the women seminarians and others of us heard this story, we were appalled and let out a collective cry of protest. Several people informed the minister that the deacon committed a criminal act and should have been prosecuted and at least reported to the authorities. They also said that the church should have offered to provide counseling and medical treatment for the young girl so that she could heal from the trauma that the deacon had caused. I will never forget the look of pain and bewilderment on the pastor's face when he heard the response. He was actually expecting the audience to applaud him for his treatment of the situation. When I asked him and other ministers present to define sexual abuse or misconduct, they had no idea. Upon reflection, they explained that abuse was a white or legal term that had no place in the black church. Isn't that pitiful? I'm stunned right now. I'm sorry. I'm just a little stunned. Even though, you guys, I read this book before. But when you go back and you reflect on something you read and you get a different or clearer understanding, it takes it to another level. Now, this pastor, and I'm hesitating because I want to make sure I'm saying what I need to say and say it clearly. Now, this pastor thought what he did was suffice. And he really expected everybody to say, yeah, you did a good job. Man, don't you know? This was a criminal act. He raped it. He should have been put in jail, had a trial, because, you know, you have to have a trial, the whole nine yards. And he should have served some time, and he should have been deemed a pedophile. What the hell? I'm going to say it like it is. What the hell? Somebody missed something. Man. Huh? He didn't get... All right. But see, that's why Dr. Matthews wrote this book, because a lot of us are stupid. We do not realize that this was something he should have turned him in. Okay. Interpreting the narratives. Pastor as a sexual predator. Anti-psychological bias. The previous narratives reveal acts of power that are perverse in nature. Child molestation has no place in the church or family. The presence of an anti-psychological bias in black churches have contributed to this problem. One of the reasons why it has been so difficult for black community to deal with this issue is due to the well-known and documented anti-psychological stance of the black community. There is some justification for this suspicion of psychology due to past tendencies of the helping professions to use model of psychological development that did not take into account the social and psychological cultural characteristics of African Americans. It was not unusual for psychologists to label black behavior as deviant if blacks exhibited family structures or behavior that did not meet the standard white middle class cultural norms. For a long time, there was also a lack of qualified helping professionals in the black community, which meant that persons and families suffering psychologically based trauma and illnesses had little opportunity for treatment. Instead of seeking professional psychological help, the tendency was to resort to the church or other folk-based remedies to deal with instances of mental problems and illnesses. Wow. One woman related how she was almost the victim of sexual attack by her younger brother. Her response to him was that he should find a girlfriend so he could exercise his sexual needs. When she reported the incident to their mother, the family felt as though they had no available resources to address her family situation. When she spoke to her son, she simply asked him if he had something he wanted to say concerning the incident with his sister. He replied no, and that was the end of the matter. When I spoke with the young man years later, he told of how his sister had continually exposed herself to him, which led to him to his attempt to have sex with her. A competent family therapist could have helped the family to understand the reasons for his and his sister's behavior and helped the family work through their issues. Unfortunately, this history of mistrust and lack of adequate psychological care and therapy has led to a tendency to throw the baby out with the bathwater. It is evident from my many years of study and training in depth psychology that a psychological understanding of the human development is essential toward helping the black community understand and deal with this issue. Now that there are many qualified black and non-black therapists who are more aware of the psychological and social dynamics of the African-American community, black churches and families have greater access therapeutic resources. So in other words, they have, there's no excuse. Basically, if what he's saying is there is no excuse for the black community to allow all of this to happen and say you don't have anybody to talk to. Back then, yes, because there wasn't a lot of people practicing practicing professionals in psychology. There wasn't. Now, in 2013, there's no excuse. And if I'm not sure, this book was written in 2012. So he just wrote this book last year, basically. So that should tell you that, how we want to say it, there's no excuse. Okay. Now, when I taught and directed the Black Church Community Programs at Chicago Theological Seminary, we invited Marion Wright, the director of the Children's Defense Fund and the foremost advocate of the needs of children in America, to speak from. The conference was attended by African American church women who were in the various helping professions as teachers, social workers, nurses, and the like. However, few of their pastors were in attendance. It was apparent that those who were on the front lines in treating and working with black children and families were black women who had a strong spiritual foundation and who were also equipped with psychological knowledge. It is also suggested that their pastors were at least one step removed from the suffering of the children and family in their community and were much less prepared to deal with their psychological issues. The churches would find ways of bringing these two groups together for the benefit of the African American community. Now, what I'm seeing is that when you become a pastor, okay, when you decide that you want to become a minister, let me say this first and foremost. I'm not saying who's called and who's not called, because that's not my call, period. If you say you got a vision from God and God said for you to be a pastor, then, I mean, fine and dandy. But there's more to it than just standing in a pulpit reading out the Bible and preaching and teaching. There's much more to it, especially when you consider yourself or call yourself a counselor. You have to be very careful with calling yourself a counselor. You just have to be, because you're putting yourself in a situation that you're really not knowledgeable about. If you don't have any education behind you, stating that you can counsel people because you're a pastor, quote unquote, you should be able to counsel. And it's showing you right now why you need to know what you're doing when you do that. We're going to take a break real quick. Since I started a little bit late, we're going to take a break right now, and I'm going to add some more time on. All right?
I'm in almost every school bus and classroom. I go to school with your children. We say the Pledge of Allegiance together. You see me around the neighborhood, and you've told me I'm a pretty good kid. Well, I'm one out of every four children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger. My teacher tells me, in this country, we could grow up and be whatever we want. I want to grow up and be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry. Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for kids like me, quietly struggling with hunger. Together, we're Feeding America. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
To help fight hunger in central Louisiana and to find your local food bank, visit feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org.
Have you thought about hosting your own radio show? If so, visit our website at sensible64.wix.com/sayyourpeacenetwork. That's sensible64.wix.com/sayyourpeace, PIECE network. We will return with Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salida.
right, you guys, we're back. Bear with me with my music. Okay. All right. Now, where did we leave off at? Let me see. You guys, I'm not going to read everything in here, but I am going to read enough for you guys to understand the dynamics of what he's trying to say about us as African-Americans and how important our spirituality as family and how sexual abuse does affect it. Okay. As more blacks, especially black pastors, receive more psychological and pastoral psychological training, more black community members and pastors will receive the emotional help they need. This anti-psychological bias seems to be lessening, but in most of my interactions with the black community, there is still a lack of trust and a suspicion of using white methods, meaning psychology, to interpret and treat the abusive behavior of black people. This anti-psychological bias also exists among the educated and non-educated black clergy. In teaching classes in human sexuality in the black community, I found it difficult to get black clergy to understand the importance of issues of emotional and psychological boundaries. A helping professional, and especially a minister who does not understand these issues, makes him or herself vulnerable to engaging in an abuse of power. What he's basically saying is he's trying to get them to understand that you have to realize you can't do this. And because some of men's way of thinking when they become a pastor, because it's about power and how they, you know, how they're dealing with power and my job is, and they get so caught up in that, he can't get them to understand that this is a very vulnerable area here, and you have to be very tender with it. And if you're not willing to learn, you're opening yourself, or you're leaving yourself open for these things to happen to you, basically is what he's saying. Black churches must be open to the possibility that they have hired someone who is not psychologically fit to be a minister. Let me say this again. Black churches must be open to the possibilities that they have hired someone who is not psychologically fit to be a minister. It's not saying he's not fit to be a minister. Psychologically, he's not fit to be a minister. The silence around sexual issues may mean that many clergy have been hired without proper screening by hiring committees. Now, if your committee is not familiar with it, how in the world do you think they know how to hire someone who is psychologically fit to do a job as ministering over or pastoring over a church or being head of a church? This lack of oversight and the silence regarding sexuality in general in the black church may contribute to the fact that many instances of sexual abuse by ministers may be unreported, ignored, or excused. Man, that is something. I'm sorry, real quick here. I have to, I got to look at this and I'm thinking, because the more and more I'm thinking of my past pastors, and I'm thinking of the people that were in those positions, that the churches that I went to, in the situations that I found myself in, that they really, really, really are not ready. They're not ready. And we have to make sure that we know what we're doing when we are serving on these hiring committees. We have to know that we are, that who are we hiring? That's crazy. This lack of oversight and the silence regarding sexuality in general in the black church may contribute to the fact that many instances of sexual abuse by ministers may be unreported, ignored, or excused. Man, awesome. Now, it says confusion of homosexual behavior with child abuse. Okay. There is no reason to think that black persons are any less susceptible to emotional illnesses, which may lead to their committing acts of sexual coercion and sexual violence. Black pastors share the same human faults as do others. There are black clergy who are sexual predators and who use their position to prey on trusting and unsuspected victims. Lack of knowledge. The well-publicized cases, sexual abuse in the Catholic Church, and are not confined to the Catholic Church. One of the problems in the black community is that there is a tendency to see issues of sexual abuse of children as a result of these priests' status as celibate. No. I have heard many members state that as the Catholic Church would just allow their priests to get married and engage in sexual relations, then they wouldn't need to abuse young boys. This is an example of the lack of clarity regarding issues of sexual abuse of power in the black community. This same lack of clarity was seen in comments regarding the Eddie Long case. Many critics of Long were more concerned with allegations of his homosexuality than the possibility of the abuse of power. Yes, we did. I got caught up on the idea that he had homosexual tendencies and he had a wife. Man. Altogether, if you want to call in, you guys, you can call in at 347-677-1749. That's 347-677-1749. Join in the conversation. I don't mind allowing you to say what you want to say. I'm here. You can do this. Okay? Now, we got caught up with the idea that, he's homosexual, he's gay. We didn't think about the devastation of the power that he had over these kids or these young men. And he abused his power. Now, one of my most frustrating teaching moments while teaching seminary students, of course, occurred when I had several pastors in my class on sexuality, and they insisted that these priests abused children because they were homosexual, because they believed that homosexuality was a grievous sin. They confused homosexual activity with the homosexual abuse of male children. What they didn't seem to realize or want to understand is that priests or ministers who are child molesters are emotionally ill, and that their sexual orientation does not contribute to their abusive behavior. Let me repeat that. What they didn't seem to realize or want to understand is that priests or ministers who are child molesters are emotionally ill, and that their sexual orientation does not contribute to their abusive behavior. So there is a difference. So in other words, they're dealing with two different things, not one. They're dealing with two different things. Okay. There are undoubtedly more straight sexual predators than there are gay perpetrators. I later discovered that one of the pastors was the victim of rape while he was in jail. The traumatic incident was now affecting his attitude toward homosexuality, since he had not worked through the effects of his own sexual victimization. So he didn't have anybody he could talk to. So his whole interpretation and the way he was looking at things, his view of things was that it was strictly homosexuality. It wasn't nothing else. It was strictly homosexuality. Now, he said, I've talked with many persons in the black community who do not distinguish between issues of homosexual behavior and that of child abuse. they have a tendency to act and believe as if they were one and the same issue. In fact, heterosexual pastors are much more likely to engage in sexually abusive behavior. I want to quote, say this again, I'm going to repeat it. In fact, heterosexual pastors are much more likely to engage in sexually abusive behavior. This linking of child abuse with homosexuality may be a way of black pastors justifying their anti-gay attitude and hiding their own instances of sexual abuse with female children and adults in their churches. Once again, these two issues are not related, and there is no evidence to suggest that gay persons are more prone to sexually abuse children. Furthermore, modern psychology no longer classifies homosexual orientation as a psychopathological condition. In one situation, I preached a sermon in a large middle class black church, and this is a minister. He is a minister. Dr. Matthews is a minister, if I did not say that at first. He said, I preached a sermon in a large middle class black church in which I examined the biblical admonitions against same-sex behavior. I demonstrated that close study of the text revealed no understanding of the ideal of sexual orientation as we understand it today, and that there have been numerous misinterpretations of biblical passages that were supposedly anti-gay. So that should tell you on a lot of stuff that we read in the Bible. Huh. Just to say that, I ain't going to go no further. I won't go further with that. The next Sunday, one of the church officials grabbed the microphone and attempted to prevent me from speaking due to my refusal to condemn homosexuals. So he wanted him to condemn homosexuals due to what the Bible said, and he refused to do it. He eventually had to be restrained and removed from church building so that the service could continue. You're acting like that in church? Let me say this again. This is how this man was acting in church, because he didn't want to hear what he was saying, what Dr. Matthews was saying. He eventually had to be restrained and removed from church building, from the church building, so that the service could continue. He was hot. I found it instructive that the next week it was discovered that he was a frequent customer of young prostitutes in his neighborhood. Wow. It was almost a textbook case of persons being disturbed about homosexuality because they were having difficulties in their own sexual life. Man, wow. I'm not laughing at the guy, I'm laughing at the situation. So, I'm seeing warning bells. I don't know about you guys, but I'm hearing warning bells. I found that there is a general ignorance among the black churches regarding biblical interpretation of texts regarding sexuality and homosexuality. Instead of availing themselves of the best of biblical scholarship regarding biblical interpretations in these areas, they rely on interpretations that are either not accurate translations of the text in question or have been subject to intentional or accidental misinterpretations and translations. We have 504. Okay, 504 dropped out. 504, call back in. If you want to say something, please call back in. Now, what is not generally understood in much of the black church community is that it is not the sexual orientation of the clergy that is driving the behavior of sexual abuse. I want to repeat that. What is not generally understood in much of the black church community is that it's not the sexual orientation of the clergy that is driving the behavior of sexual abuse. Instead, the behavior is being driven by the sexual abuser's desire to gain power over his victim. All right, I'm going to let 504 in. Good afternoon, 504. How are you?
How you doing?
I'm doing just fine, and you?
Oh, great. Reverend Brown, how you doing, my sister?
Hi, how are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. I like your topic. I want to tell you that.
Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you.
As you know, last week I was debating that on the on Facebook regarding homosexuality.
Mhm.
And my position is clear. In case the gay community is listening, I do not support a man. Same-sex marriage, let's just put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I do not support same-sex marriage.
Okay.
And, I believe that God made a man for a woman and a woman for a man. That's my belief. Now, would I go out and oppress them or attack them or picket against them? No. But I just still believe that I should have a right to express my belief. And as far as the gay community having a right to get a home, having a right to go eat where they want to eat, having a right to have insurance, all the stuff that America promised that we, all of us, to have equally, I agree with that. I just don't agree with the marriage side and the sexual relationship side of it. But I want my gay brothers and sisters to understand that. Don't take this personally. It's only spiritual that I don't, that I obey God and don't be for this type of lifestyle of a woman having a woman, a man having a man. And people got to understand that. It's not for gay bashing or having anything kind of discriminatory action against the gay community. I have never got out there and held a news conference but one time against them. I was in my younger days. I was real young, in my 20s. I joined the group, and we went against the gay community. But I will not do it again, but I will state my position clear. And that is, I really believe that homosexuality is not of God. I really believe that. I don't want no homosexual person coming to me one day. I'm saying I'm born again now. I done gave Christ my life. And you supported me. And you know better than that, Reverend Brown. You know, I don't want to chastise me. I'm not trying to, look, let me say this here quickly, if you don't mind. I'm not trying to go into nobody's pocketbook, okay? I know a lot of politicians and celebrities, civil rights leaders, the gay community pour the money in at them contributions. I'm not trying to take your money. I'm just being honest. All I'm, that's not my movement. All I'm trying to do is be fair and just be honest and just speak the truth. The truth is, I really believe that God instituted marriage between a man and a woman. I was hurt to see the president go far as he did, but he did it in a political sense to get votes, and I understand the Bible even says that we're going to sell out. You just talked about selling out and stuff like that, but I'm just saying that I appreciate you, sister, and I'm going to be listening to you every week, okay?
Okay, look, before you go, I have a question. I want you to answer the question. The question is, and I'm reading from the book, this is what this doctor said. He said, I found that there is a general ignorance among the black churches regarding the biblical interpretations of texts regarding sexuality and homosexuality. Instead of availing themselves of the best biblical scholarship regarding biblical interpretation in these areas, they rely on interpretations that are either not accurate translations of the text in question or have been subject to intentional or accidental misinterpretations in translation. Now, do you believe that?
Well, I don't agree. I disagree with him because I don't think, and I understand the word that floats around that King James interpretation and that Roman chapter 1 interpretation of man with man. They say that we misinterpreting that when they say lovers of their own selves. I believe they say that the preachers are misinterpreting themselves but that's not the truth. I really believe that, you know, I really believe divinely and spiritually that the Word of God is what it is, and that is,
mm-hmm.
you know, God was not made Eve in the garden with made Adam and Eve in the garden. I really believe God is perfect. Now, if you don't
mm-hmm.
believe the Word of God, then there's nothing I can say or nothing
mm-hmm.
I can do to convince you to believe in the Word of God. All I can say, I'm not going to do like Carson Pearson did and embrace his homosexuality in the church. He lost all his members. I'm going to stick to the script. If gay people come around me and say, I need your support because they don't want to hire us on this job, I'm going to go help them. I need support because we can't get medical care because they're saying we're gay. I'm going to fight with you. I'm going to fight for you if you say you can't get an apartment building because you're gay. I'm going to fight for you. I'm not going to fight for your right to go hug and kiss somebody and make some marriage vows. I'm not going to do that, and I apologize. I don't hurt anybody's feelings. I really apologize.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? So I don't think I'm misinterpreting God's word. I believe I'm just basically believing God's word and, you know, and for face value. Like the word say, man with man, working on things which are unnatural. I really believe that this is unnatural. I know some gay people are hurting right now, listening to me, calling me a bigot right now, probably. But I'm saying to the gay community, I'm not a bigot. If I was a bigot, I'd just be against you completely. But I say if you go out there and you need me to fight for you because of discrimination, police brutality, or whatever. Matter of fact, let me say this. We have fought for some gay brothers who the police were bringing to jail claiming they were prostitutes on the street because they were dressing like drag queens and bringing them to jail. We fought for them, so if I can go out and fight for a gay person because the police is arresting you because you're dressing like a prostitute in a drag queen situation, then I can't be so much against you. I'm just against your lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
As far as coming on at me, you know, rather than trying to grab my hand or saying, making some passes at me, I don't believe that I believe that's inappropriate for you to do that.
Okay.
That's
understandable. I was just basically because I was just going by what he was saying and I was.
And
just
I understand.
Okay, I got you. I got you. Ready.
And I understand. And I love what you're doing. You know, so I didn't really never hear your position.
What my position on what?
The gay community. I'm saying.
On homosexuality, I believe.
Yeah, I just tuned in kind of late. You know. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, no, this is about this. The name of the book is Sexual Abuse of Power in the Black Churches, and it's geared toward pastors not being educated and misusing their power when it comes to children, when it comes to the males and females and the women of the church. That's what this book is about. This Dr.
That's a heavy book there.
Yeah. He wrote this book for a reason, and I was just saying, before I asked you that was, you know, in the Catholic Church, you know, the priests were raping the boys in the church, and they kept making excuses if you let them get married. He said that's not the problem. He said it has nothing to do with homosexuality. We get it mixed up, and the idea that they're doing it is because sexually they are sick. They got an illness, so we don't want to say that there's an illness. We just want to holler them, saying that they're labeled them homosexual. They're not homosexual. They have an illness. And
I disagree with you know, that homosexual people got an illness. Because
No, listen to what I'm saying. I'm saying that the priests who were abusing these boys.
I understand, No, I'm agreeing with you. I'm saying that the priests do not have an illness. All illness. Now, if we were dealing with obesity, that's a sickness because why should I eat so much? And I'm a big man, right? I'm talking about myself. Why
mm-hmm.
should we eat so much that we gain 30, 40, 50 pounds? So that's a sick. That's a ill. That's a sickness. But homosexuality is not a sickness. That's a choice. You understand?
But I was just saying we were just like with Eddie Long. He had another example. He was talking about Eddie Long. Everybody was so pushed or so overwhelmed and so focused on him being a homosexual that really that wasn't a problem. We were not looking at the point that he abused his power as the doggone bishop of a church. We missed that whole point.
Right, but let me say this, because this abuse that you are talking about is happening in the church, but also is happening out of the church.
So I'm saying
that it's not just relegated to the church, because you got a lot of men out here who are with money and power are taking advantage. But I understand his book.
Because
you understand what I'm saying? His book is talking about the church.
Yeah,
but I'm just saying that. Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry.
You know what I'm saying? No, I'm saying it's not being talked about in the churches. It's not being talked about in the black community that this
is
going on.
Well, let me say this. Okay. And there are churches, and I know several of them, who have brought the issue up. And what the gay community have done,
Reverend Brown,
huh?
Not talking about gay. I'm talking about sexual abuse of power in the church. I'm saying that it's not being talked about in the black community, in the black churches. We hide it. We don't want to talk about it. We don't want to face it, and it's going on every day. I'm not talking specifically about.
You're talking about general.
Sexual. Yes, sexual abuse of power in the black church.
Oh, it's basically, of course, it's happening in the church. I mean, some pastors, they have a lot of power over their members. That's a fact. That's a fact. I mean, and then, you know, what gets me is that the pastor is satisfied with the woman, the wife he got. He got to have the other men's wives in the church.
Well,
this is actually going on right now.
Well, we know that, but I'm saying it's actually an illness, and it's a power play. It's not about he is not enough. It's the idea that I have power over these people, so I can do this. I can abuse them. It's like a husband who abuses his wife. He has power. He knows she's afraid of him. He knows that she has a certain respect for him. So, of course, she's vulnerable. She's easy. Let me go at it. And that's what happens
in the church. You know, for power, that's why they say power corrupts. Right?
Yeah.
When you get financially secure, and also even some of these churches where the pastor is not a mega church. We talk about mega and small churches. Some of the small churches, we say small churches mean small membership. The pastor has well a significant amount of power over his flock. You understand?
Yes.
And so that needs to be basically, you know, that needs to be talked about, and I'm glad you're bringing it up. I'm glad you're bringing it up because the people that are listening, I know you're limited time, but and I apologize for taking up all your time, but I know that this issue must be addressed. I'm willing to put it on my agenda. As you know, I'm going to tour at the end of April. And I'm willing to draft this. I want a copy of that book. I'm willing to bring this out in the public nationally that there are pastors who are actually, you know, abusing their power and abusing their members, and this needs to be stopped.
Well, you think about all
they
these babies.
They need a summit on it, huh?
You think about all these babies. You think about all these babies that's being born out of wedlock. A lot of them don't belong to boyfriends. Okay?
Yeah.
I go to church faithfully every Sunday. I do this, I do that in church. Nobody's saying that the baby belongs to the boyfriend or the husband. Okay?
Yep.
You see? So if that girl comes, and what he's basically saying is we have people in position of power that psychologically are not prepared to be in this position, especially when it deals with counseling and talking and having a communication, open communication with your members. And your members have to be able to trust you and know that when I come to you and you counseling me, that you're not trying to sleep with me. We have to, a woman has to know that, a child has to know that, anybody has to know that, that
I can concur with what you are saying, because I know for a fact that at several churches, the pastors are abusing the members. That's unfortunately. I would add that to my agenda, because pastors need to preach the word and stop this nonsense of abusing their members. And I'm all for that, so I appreciate you today.
Mm-hmm. Anytime, Coley.
All right.
Thank you very much for calling in.
All right, my sister.
Okay. Talk to you later.
All right.
All right, you guys. Excuse me. Okay, let's continue. That was a good, I like that conversation. Okay. It says here, instead, the behavior is being driven by sexual abusers' desire to gain power over the victim, just like we were just talking, me and Reverend Brown was just saying. It's a desire to gain power over his victim. The sexually abusive behavior is the means to the abusive pastor uses that fulfills an emotional need of the sexual predator to humiliate his victim. You're a pastor of a church, and your whole focus at that time, instead of trying to help somebody, you want to humiliate them? Man, the abuse is related to the desire for power, and as some experts in sexual abuse would say, the sexual abuse of power is not primarily about sex. Let me say this again. The abuse is related to the desire for power, and as some experts in sexual abuse would say, the sexual abuse of power is not primarily about sex. It is about the abusers gaining a sense of power through abusing the less powerful victim. Man, just like I just said, it don't necessarily always have to be about sex. It's power. I have power over this person. This person looks up to me. They almost can kiss my shoes. That's how much power I have over them. Man, I believe that it's more comprehensive to say that sexual abuse involves both sex and power, especially when sexual perversion is involved. The perpetrator has a desire to gain power by humiliating the victim through coercion, seduction, or force. And the feelings associated with sexual dominance and coercion feeds his need for power over others. Wow. Denial becomes an issue as the perpetrator justifies his actions as due to external or internal forces beyond their control or due to some fault of his victims. Oh, I didn't mean to do that. Now, wait a minute. Let's talk about this. Now, let's get our Bibles, and we're going to pray about this. We're going to pray that what I did, that was the devil. That wasn't me. I didn't do that. Now, come on over here. Give me your hand so we can pray. This was the devil, and I want you to help me. Help you pray the devil out of me. I love it. All right. Denial becomes an issue as the perpetrator justifies his actions as due to external or internal forces beyond their control or due to some fault of his victim. Now, you know what? You walked up in the church. Come on in here in my office and sit down. You walked up in the church. You had on that shirt. Why do you wear that shirt? Then you want to sit on the front pew. Then you refuse for the little scarf to go across your lap. So what do you expect from me to do? Now, you come on over here. Come on over here. Come close to my desk. Any other time you at my desk, now you come right over here. Now, what you got to do is you got to stop wearing these kind of skirts. You don't wear that kind of skirt to church. Girl, you know what? Your thighs don't got bigger. I'm sorry. I'm just saying like I'm saying it like it is. That's how it is. All right. Core emotional boundaries in sexual abuse. This section deals with the problems of sexual misconduct as they are related to religious leaders failing to maintain appropriate emotional and sexual boundaries. Wow. my observation is that this is the major dynamic that is responsible for most acts of sexual abuse in the church. I will present several examples of how poor and undefined boundaries lead to sexual misconduct. By poor emotional boundaries, I mean that the pastor or religious leader does not maintain enough emotional, physical, and sexual distance between their own needs and those of their followers. This can lead to an inappropriate sexual relationship with persons whom they are supposed to be leading. This often takes the form of multiple and adulterous relationships with church members. I believe that it is so common as to almost be normative, which is so true. It's normal. It's normal. And we don't want to admit that it's normal, but it is very much so normal. And I'm not justifying it or saying I agree with it, but that's just how it is. So much that it has become a living dynamic and has developed its own discourse that justifies unethical behavior. Now, remember earlier we were explaining how the position or the role of your pastor in a church. And I'm going to quickly go back to what I said so that we can understand why he said that. It says, because the pastor is the primary role model and leader of the congregation, he sets the terms by example for ethical or unethical behavior in the church. His actions will have a profound effect on the spiritual and psychological well-being of his church and the community. That right there tells you. And it says, quickly right here, that, excuse me, I'm sorry, here we go. It says right here, I believe that it's so common as to almost be normative, so much that it has become a living dynamic and has developed its own discourse and justifies unethical behavior. It falls up under the unethical behavior slot. Okay? Now, it says violation of emotional and sexual boundaries. Clergy are involved in the most emotionally intimate levels of human relationships as they discuss major life issues with their parishioners. This can create feelings of closeness and familiarity, which can easily lead to an overstepping of emotional boundaries. Here again, the history of silence about sexuality works against the black pastor. As I will discuss later, there has been the development of an entire ethos and ethics around issues of sexuality in the black community that serves to heighten the possibility of a failure for adequate boundary setting. In addition, the anti-psychological bias leads black pastors and parishioners to deny the importance of adequate boundaries in favor of folk beliefs and knowledge that they may have been functional at one time but are no longer adequate to prevent the sexual abuse of power. This folk knowledge may in fact be a warped imitation, reproduction, and replication of the sexual and psychological oppression that blacks have experienced at the hands of racist society. So this affects us because of our lack of knowledge of how to handle situations like this. You know, we don't know what the interpretation of boundaries are. And because we don't know, we continue to repeat the cycle. Okay, it says the discourse of sexual abuse. The ideal that pastors should expect to have sexual relationships with their parishioners are common among black clergy and church persons. What? Somebody call in and I'm asking you to explain that to me. I'm going to repeat it and I want you to explain it to me. 347-677-1749. He says that the ideal that pastors should expect to have sexual relationships with their parishioners are common among black clergy and church persons. What? Man, they have convinced themselves that it is natural for clergy, in most cases, male clergy, to violate appropriate sexual boundaries. I am floored with this. Maybe that's why in churches we overlook certain things. And I'm going to say from my experience, I've heard pastors say this to their female parishioners or members. Girl, that skirt is tight. Instead of looking at them. Girl, look at button that shirt up so you get me to thinking. I've literally heard pastors say that. They don't know I'm hearing it because they try to say it out of my ear range, but I actually heard that. And you don't look at him, but what I did was I allowed that to happen, and I didn't say anything about it. I justified it by walking away and pretend like I didn't hear it. So I justified his subtle sexual abuse. Or, no, his subtle sexual harassment. That's what I did. But I don't know what their relationship is. I don't know if they've been, you know, in an intimate relationship with each other, and he's allowed to say that to her. So it was not, I don't think at the time it was my place to say anything. But I did hear it. So, okay, they have convinced themselves that it is natural for clergy, in most cases, male clergy, to violate appropriate sexual boundaries. This folk perspective is thought to be an alternative to more puritanical white views of sexuality. In fact, these ideals are not derived from an African past, but they are, in fact, the recapitulation of the lack of sexual boundary experienced by blacks during slavery. Goes back to the stolen women, you guys, we talked about on here, how there was no boundaries. In our country, in Africa, a woman was sacred. You didn't just say and be disrespectful to a woman. You didn't talk about her body parts. But when she came to America, and when the Western missionaries got a hold to her, they told her body was nasty, that her body was lusty, and that she couldn't do this and she couldn't do that, something she was normally doing over there as far as rituals and traditions. She could no longer bring it over here. We were told that we had to cover up. The breasts were always revealed, and if you see now in certain pictures, you see the women with their breasts revealed. In the book Stolen Women, it explains why. Over in Africa, to see a woman's breast wasn't sexual. It was a symbol of life because milk to breastfeed the baby came from that. So that was a symbol of life, not of sex. That was never interpreted as part of a sexual part of the body. But because when the Western missionaries came and said, you got to cover up because you're lusty, you're sensual, you're sexy. When they start doing that, it made the woman start not liking her body and covering up. So this goes all the way back to this. This is a psychological thing that's been going on for years and years and years, hundreds of years. And it has been brainwashed into us that this is how we are supposed to look at ourselves. So, sorry, let me get off that little soul box. But that explains it. It says the sexual violation of black women, men, and children in which slave masters exploited the black body for economic benefit and physical pleasure destroyed family bounds and boundaries that regulate appropriate, loving, intimate, and proper sexual activity. Just what I just said. Just what I just said. African-American male slaves were forced to have sexual intercourse with their female community members in order to produce more slave children for commerce and labor on the plantation. We're not far off the subject now. Listen to this. This means that black males as well as females suffered the destructive effects of sexual abuse of power. Slave narratives are consistent on this issue as they relate how black males felt violated by the system of slavery, which required that they sexually violate their black female community members. The lingering effects that may have had on the black male psyche is open to conjecture, but it may have contributed to the present prevalence of the sexual abuse of power by male clergy. There is a possibility that what happened back then has an effect on us now. Now, that's according to what he's saying in the book. Now, excuse me, sexual practices and attitude in Africa. Let's talk about this real quick, and then I think I need to shut it down, and we'll be back Monday with the rest of this. It says sexual practice and attitudes in Africa. Anyone who has studied the sexual practices of Africans in tradition, African societies are struck by their ease with the acceptance of sexual activity and the goodness of the body. But these societies also had in place certain rules and guidelines which protected women and children from exploitation. Let me say that again. African societies are struck by their ease with the acceptance of sexual activity and the goodness of the body. But these societies also had in place certain rules and guidelines which protected women and children from exploitation. The body was both erotic and the site for appropriate ethical activity. Some might argue that when African tribal leaders began to abuse their powers in this regard and overstep the traditional boundaries, especially during the time of European colonial exploitation of Africa, this misbehavior and appropriation of patriarchal behavior weakened the community and made the people more vulnerable to exploitation. Did you hear what he just said? And this came from the Things Fall Apart by Chinua and the Death of the King's Horsemen. They both explain this in their books. Okay, it says, transference, black folk culture, and ethics. Most professional codes of ethics, are built on an exception of the need for healthy emotional boundaries between the helping professionals and their clients. This is true of doctors, nurses, lawyers, teachers, etc. But the black church and clergy have developed a folk understanding of sexuality which has relieved them of the responsibility of maintaining appropriate boundaries. It has become too easy to explain abuse of power as simply the result of sexual attraction, community expectations, or dubious biblical interpretations. Most codes of ethics state that there should be a prohibition against sexual contact between the professional and the client. This is important for several reasons. It should be the same in church as it is in the professional arena. The first reason is because there is a tendency for the person being held to develop feelings of dependency or attachment, transference, to the professional who is in position of power. Okay? These are often sexualized feelings in which the client believes that he or she is in love with the helper, and they may project their feelings so that they may believe that this love also exists in the helper toward them. These feelings create an ideal that they are special and are the leader's favorite. If the leader is not careful about maintaining appropriate boundaries, the desire for closeness makes the parishioner particularly vulnerable to the manipulation and exploitation by the helper who is in greater power relationship. Now, it's saying if we can have that between the doctor and his client or the professional and his client, that should still go for the church, which it is not going for the church. There is none. We don't have a professional type of, boundaries when it comes, or guidelines or rules and regulations when it comes to the pastor and his parishioners or members of the church. That goes for male and female, okay? We're down to 2 minutes. Okay. This effect first described by Sigmund Freud, it's called transference because the client, or in this case, the parishioner, transfers or projects their misplaced feelings of love, affection, and sometimes anger or other emotions onto the helper, who is the pastor. This is not in or and of itself a bad thing. Few the other depth psychologists believe that there was no healing without transference, because it was through transference that the patient revealed their deepest feelings. These feelings could be used for healing as long as the healer maintained an appropriate emotional, sexual, and physical distance from the client and did not give in to these projections of love and closeness. I totally understand that. When we come back Monday, we will talk about counter-transference. Okay? We are doing the sexual abuse of power in the Black Church. I want to thank each and every one of you who listened in. I want to thank Reverend Brown for calling in. Great conversation, you guys. I love this. I hope you guys are learning from what I'm saying. If you have any questions, please feel free to hit me up on Facebook. I'm there. I don't mind listening. I don't mind. And I can even go over the book with you if you want me to. I can show you different points. But I want to do this on air because I think it's a great book. Learn more, a lot from it. I want to thank you guys again, and I want to say good night. This has been Salita with Through the Eyes of the Black Woman on the Say Your Peace Radio Network. Thank you. Bye-bye.
This has been another episode of Through the Eyes of the Black Woman with your host, Salita. We want to thank you for listening in, and stay tuned.